Atlantic to the Pacific. From mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus screaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Yes, hour number two of tonight's Speaking of Strange, and we have more weird news for you. We have a little update for you on the compass. And we're going to talk some about the idea of portals. What is a portal? People throw this term portal around a lot, and I've been thinking about it a lot recently. And I kind of came up with a definition of a portal. I don't have it written down in front of me, but I think a portal is a point where information from multiple dimensions are bent to be either closer together or farther apart. So, look at it this way. Okay, there are natural portals and there are artificial portals. So, a natural portal might be a place like the Bermuda Triangle or Round Mountain. And an artificial portal might be something like a pyramid or Stonehenge, structures that are supposed to bend information. And often you will find an artificial portal placed on top of a natural portal. So, let me tell you sort of generally what I'm thinking of here, Forrest. Okay, when you wake up in the morning, or whenever you wake up, and you throw open the shades, and sunlight fills the room, you are not exactly directly aware of all the sunlight, all the energy in the room. You are actually measuring how much is in the room by how well you can see objects in the room. That's your visual reference. But the light is everywhere. However, if you have a tool, like a little glass prism, well, this is able to bend and slow that energy down, so now you can get a better look at it and interface with it, and you see the colors now, red, orange, yellow, green, blue. So the prism is like a little tool for opening a portal, right? It's taking the energy that's already there, but it's changing the way it flows so you can bring it into your arena of awareness, right?
Right.
So maybe pyramids are designed to do something like that with this sort of cosmic or geologic energy that's all around the planet. And when a portal is opened, you are able to you're able to access information differently. So I would say every single person's brain is a miniature portal.
Right.
Because in your brain, all these weird little, you know, subatomic interactions are happening, and you are able to visualize the past. In some cases, you're able to see the future. You're able to create ideas. And that's why consciousness is such a mystery, because that the brain is a little portal. And I started thinking, well, before I go any further, I mean, how does that idea strike you, Forrest?
It strikes me, I mean, actually, what you're talking about with the bending of light and all that good stuff, actually, Newton delved into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he actually burned a lot of his documents toward the end of his life, which might have had a bunch of this information on it, but no one really knows what that information had on it. But getting back to the about bending light, and Newton was able to realize that, and actually that's how he created one of the first short-body telescopes. of his time. So
Newton was the man, you know. I mean, in fact, a lot of people think of Newton and gravity and apples falling off trees. But, and, you know, maybe Newton, I'm sure Newton saw an apple one day fall off a tree. But if you really want to look historically at what inspired Newton to start coming up with serious ideas about gravity, it was watching comets. And we recently had this Comet Ison episode, which, you know, who knows, maybe the comet, whatever remains of the comet, will end up giving us some spectacular show next year. But it was, you know, Newton working with Edmund Halley, discussing the fact that comets that have come by through history may in some cases be the same comet cycling back around, that made them start looking at the idea that there are elliptical orbital paths that bodies in space take. And if that's the case, well, then that gives you applications for how all these heavenly bodies sort of orbit around each other. And so it was really studying comets that made a bigger impact on Newton and theories of gravity more than apples falling from trees. And so I've been really interested in, you know, why is it that what happens inside the human brain gives us access to this information that we can't so easily gather otherwise. So, like, for example, Miss Wright here from Wright's Coin Shop, you've been able to see paranormal things throughout your life, right?
Yes.
But you haven't been able to capture this stuff on film, for example.
Well, it...
Not the way you see it.
Not the way that I see it.
So it shows that there's something special about the way your brain works, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is for most people, because it's all about the human experience. And any time that you use an instrument and you are trying to take this instrument and capture something with it, what you're really attempting to do is sort of represent the perception of the human brain on a miniature level in a recordable format. So that is to say, the hope that if you go to a haunted house and you maybe you hear some creepy noise and you hit the record button, you're doing that with the expectation that this device is going to capture what you heard, but it's going to be recorded in a way you can play back for others.
Yes.
And yet, using all these instruments, cameras, audio recorders, electromagnetic field devices, electrostatic meters, etc., has still not given us the proof that we're all looking for as a mainstream collective society that these paranormal things occur. It always boils down to, ultimately, at the end of the day, the human perspective and the human experience. So I've been looking at, okay, how do we take our instrumentation and make it behave, if you will, more like the human brain behaves? Because it seems like that for a long time, in especially the ghost research field now, we've kind of been spinning our wheels. I mean, it's kind of old hat now to watch TV and to see people running around out there with EMF meters and thermal cameras. And yeah, they get some cool stuff, but we need something more. We need something better. And so I've been doing a lot of thinking about this and trying to figure out how do we get our instrumentation to perform more like the human brain performs. And in doing that, I've been looking at what happens inside the brain and what happens at places where paranormal activity is enhanced so that people seem to experience more of it. And a lot of this is based upon the time I spent in the Bermuda Triangle. Because that the Bermuda Triangle and places like that, what we might think of as portal locations, they seem to give you a higher chance that you're going to see a range, a plethora, a spectrum of weird stuff. That you're going to, you're going to have a higher odds maybe of seeing ghosts and UFOs and cryptids, and psychic stuff will happen. Now, not to say that it's all going to be more extreme there, but the average amount of activity in all cases is going to be a little higher. And I started looking at these places in a variety of ways, and people now frequently, they say to me, well, you have this Bermuda Triangle Research Center. Well, what's going on in the Bermuda Triangle? What's the deal? Because most people think of the Bermuda Triangle as just being a place where, folks disappear. But actually, when you look at it in terms of all the weird stuff that happens, I find it incredibly insightful that NASA has produced some great graphics that show the inconsistency of the Earth's gravitational field. And if you've never seen this before, it's all you have to do is go to Google and type in, like, NASA gravity images or something like that, and you will see these sort of color-coded images of Earth that come up, showing that in some places on Earth, the gravitational field is stronger, and in some places, it's weaker. And the stronger places are color-coded as red, and the weaker places are color-coded as blue. And what you will see is that many of these areas that we consider warp or portal-type locations are blue. I mean, the entire Bermuda Triangle is a big patch of blue. So S.K. Forrest, he's got a map up right there that shows this. So you can see right there, Forrest, look at that area called the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, it's a dark blue.
It's a dark blue. And you know what? The darkest of the dark blue is the island of Puerto Rico. It's so dark that you can't even usually see it on these maps. And it's also interesting that, you know, geologically, you have, right within a very short span there, mountains that go from 4,000 feet to the Puerto Rico Trench, which is almost 30,000 feet deep, which might be like 30 miles away or something like that. So there's a lot of geologic dynamic structure there as well. So I was thinking, okay, well, if less gravity in these places like the Bermuda Triangle create more paranormal experiences, what is that telling us about how the human brain is affected and how the human brain is able to pick these things up? And how that we can use that to make our instruments more like the human brain. I wasn't sure whether or not I was going to spill the beans on the show tonight, but I think I might just do it. I think I might tell you about this groundbreaking new approach that I've come up with. Yeah, I think you need to know this. I may as well get it out there. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Heaven from hell, blue skies from pain. Can you tell a green field? We'll be right back.
Speaking of Strand, the show where the unusual becomes usual. Our website is speakingofstrange.com. And trust me, if you have not been to sunshinesimple.com yet and seen the video for the world's most powerful solar generator for the lowest price, I implore you to go there and see it right now. We're in for a tough winter. That's what everybody's saying. It's been predicted by the Farmer's Almanac, and it might just be a rough one. So I hope you'll go and check out sunshinesimple.com. And you know, even if you have a generator, you know, what do you do when it runs out of fuel?
Well, even already this year, we've had some tough winter here in Western North Carolina.
Yeah.
And, you know, my power went out like for 2 hours the other night. Luckily, I've got a Sunshine Simple generator. And that thing, Kelly and I were just nice and cozy at the house, watching TV, watching the Roku.
See? That is why you will be the envy of everybody. That's the problem. If you buy one, don't let your neighbors know you have one.
Exactly.
Because they're going to come over and suck up all your energy.
Ironically, you know, the only problem we had,
what?
We didn't have any ice.
That is ironic. Well, go to sunshinesimple.com and watch the brief video there. And you'll see why we've sold these all over the world. So, you know, here's the thing. I'm struggling right now with how much I should actually say about this new technique that I'm calling, egotistically, the Warren technique. Because as we speak, I have a selection of colleagues and students who are on the cutting edge, who are using this new technique. And some of the results are pretty remarkable. I want to tell you so much, but I also don't want to contaminate the results. So let me just tell you this. The human brain is the seat of consciousness. We know that because if I cut your arm off, it doesn't change your personality. But if I hit you in the head with a baseball bat, yeah, maybe. There's something special about the brain. And when you break the brain down, at first it just looks like, you know, carbon-based tissue, but you keep breaking it down, and what you find is there are these subatomic particles that are firing electricity at each other. And they are simultaneously popping in and out of measurable existence. Now, gravity is a very significant factor because it's kind of what binds the whole universe together in one way or another, as far as we know, even when you incorporate dark matter. And if a planet is big, it has a lot of gravity, so things are going to be attracted to it, you know, very easily. If it's small, not so much. Even though gravity is one of the weakest forces in the universe, things are so big, it becomes a big deal. So, and to demonstrate this, okay, if I took a nail and I hung it from a string and I brought a magnet over to it, boom, you're going to see that nail shoot over to the magnet. That magnetic force is strong. If I take a plastic comb and I stroke it on my hair and then I hang it from a string, and I bring something of an opposite charge near it, boom, you're going to see it shoot up. That's a strong force, electricity. But if I hang a grape or whatever, a pea from a string, and I bring a baseball, or for that matter, a beach ball over or whatever, you're not going to see it move. So gravity is a weak force, but things are just so big that it makes a big impact on the way the universe works. So bearing that in mind, the particles in your brain are so small that gravity is making much less of an impact on them. And so when you go to places where there's even less gravity, the fact there's even less gravity is going to make an even bigger impact. Does that make sense for us?
Yes.
Okay. And we are able to see and perceive things that we can't usually perceive. because we're dealing with it at such a small subatomic level. Well, what I have come up with is a technique that will take the instruments that we use and utilize them with the least amount of gravitational impact as possible. Now, I'm not going to, I don't feel comfortable saying any more about the technique at this point, because that it's being experimented with right now, and I don't want to contaminate that. But if I'm right about this, what I'm calling the Warren technique, then you're going to see a wave of new paranormal data that comes forth over the next couple of years like we've never seen before. And it will be because that if you look at a black hole removes all the information from the area. However, if you're out in outer space where there's virtually no gravity, and, you know, there's a little bit, well, then you're going to have an enormous amount of information. So I'm looking at the difference between the extremes, extreme condensed gravity and no gravity. And I'm learning about how we take the tools that we are using and use them in a different way. Because if you want to look at the way that the force of gravity works in particular, okay, let's say, Shelley, I want to share some information, and I'm trying to transmit it from me to you. People have been developing super sensitive instruments for years. The problem with these super sensitive instruments is that they do a great job of amplifying the information, but they also amplify the background noise. And so it's really more of an issue of filtering than noise. So let's say, Shelley, I take a jar, a pickle jar, and I say, Shelley, I'm going to pour 1,000 marbles into this jar. And all of them are white, but there's one red one. And I pour all of these into the jar, and I hand it to you. And you look at that jar. The odds are very low, wouldn't you say, that you're actually going to be able to see that red one, right? We're on radio. You have to speak. You can't shake
your head. She's shaking her head yet.
Now, what that means is that, now, you might luck out. You might luck out, and that red one is going to be positioned somewhere where you can see it. But the odds are it's going to be in the middle somewhere, right?
Right.
That's what happens when you condense the information together. And that's what gravity does. Gravity condenses information together. And when it condenses the noise with what you're looking for, the odds go down that you're going to find it. On the other hand, Shelley, if you stand up on a balcony in a theater and you look down and we pour these marbles out one layer thick across the floor and you look down, odds are higher you're going to see the red marble.
Yes.
Yeah. That is what less gravity does. Less gravity allows the information to be distributed more evenly. So what are your initial thoughts on the impact that I'm trying to illustrate here that gravity makes on... Okay, you're not ready to comment yet. well, I tell you what, we're coming up on a break. Even though I'm not ready to tell you exactly what the technique is, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about places on the planet that might be portals where there is less gravity and the information is able to come through more freely, and how that might apply to some of these mythical creatures that we talk about, such as Santa Claus and, yes, the Krampus. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. strangers around the globe. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. And yes, we do explore the summit of mankind's enlightenment and the pit of his depravity. And if you kept up with us the first two segments, well, that was kind of the summit. Next hour, we'll call it the Dark 30 Hour. We still have a little ways to go, but you see, that's why I'm so excited about this, you know, new technique. I think it may change things. It may move us forward. Forrest, you know how that there are a lot of great ufologists out there, for example, who've been around for decades, and they're highly respected folks, but you talk to them, and they are still saying, like, well, UFOs are powered by nuclear reactors, and they got to change the oil once in a while.
They're setting their ways.
Yeah, and it just seems like they're not taking into consideration the true complexity of what's happening with the flying saucer phenomenon.
Right.
They're not willing to move forward. Well, the same thing has been happening in the ghost and paranormal field for a while. And this new approach, this new technique that I'm teaching to select students right now is going to push us forward. Now, I don't know exactly what the outcome of all this is going to be. As Einstein said, if we knew what we were doing, we wouldn't call it research. But I think by looking at the relationship between portals and the human brain and figuring out how to put instruments in a state closer to that relationship, we are going to get better results. And I always find it intriguing to look at that dynamic between how much of the universe is what we create and how much is what we experience. It goes back to, remember our last show when the physicist was saying, like, the universe doesn't create life, life creates the universe, right? So anytime that we have, like, a holiday or a season that comes around when collectively people all over the world start to think the same thing, it makes you wonder if they are going to create something together.
Right.
Like the Tulpa effect.
Right.
Which is exactly what we worked on with the Apparition film. Right, Shelley?
Which, by the way, is on HBO this month.
Is it?
It is.
So, yeah, Shelley Wright was the center of our experiment. And she was envisioning a specter being created.
Yes.
And we were probably doing the most frightening experiment ever, broadcasting Shelley's waves from her brain.
Oh, my.
Magnified by like 500,000 times.
The Bible was never the same.
Actually, not. I think biblically, like, one of the seals was ripped open that night. That's probably our legacy. You know, we're going to die for us and think, oh, we've been great people and we've tried to enlighten mankind. And we get to the pearly gate and St. Peter goes, we gave you all this ability and you hooked Shelley Wright's brain up to a machine and magnified it.
Which I just want to say that the house that this experience were performed might be coming up for sale soon.
Is that right? Are you serious?
If someone wants to purchase this location where all kinds of strange stuff has happened and been experimented with, please get in touch with the show.
Wow. Would you like to buy that house that we've been experimenting in, Shelley?
I already own a house, thank you. I'm quite happy with it. I have my own little issues going on there.
Well, the house is notorious now. I mean, it's internationally famous for the things that we unleash there. We created a kind of a portal haunted by Shelley Wright's nightmares. Actually, it probably gets her nightmares probably get a lot darker and deeper than anything in that house. But yeah, how do you feel about that, Shelley? Knowing you single-handedly created some kind of Tulpa over there that made the doors fly open and dark figures run around and all that.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Made light fixtures fall off the wall.
Yeah.
And explode.
Yeah. Made blue light appear.
Yeah, does that really make you feel good? Or do you feel like, overwhelmed?
I don't feel overwhelmed.
Really?
No. Mm. No, it's a...
That's spooky stuff. Okay. So, that's why, I've thought, you know, tulpas, when enough people think the same thing at once, a tulpa might be created. And that whenever Christmas rolls around, and you have people all over the world thinking about the image of Santa Claus, it makes sense that there actually would be sightings of Santa Claus. And, you know, I've talked about this on the air before. One year I got really serious about this, and I sent out an e-newsletter to thousands of people, and I said, hey, seriously, guys, how many of you think you've seen Santa Claus? And I didn't think I would get one serious response, and I got dozens of very passionate, serious responses from people all around the world who were saying, thank God somebody's looking into this. People saying, yes, I've seen Santa Claus. I've seen him in the sleigh. There have been hoof prints left behind. I mean, just fantastic stories, stories that are so good. I even pitched this as a TV concept, like, let's do a holiday special. It's one of those brilliant ideas that is ahead of its time. I'm sure it'll happen one day. But I'll get no credit for it. But I'm telling you guys, there are people out there who believe that Santa Claus is real. And they've seen him. And it has to be a tulpa. Because we know, if there are any kids listening, tune out right now.
We know, cover your ears.
Santa doesn't exactly exist in the same way that Forrest and Shelley and I do.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a magical creature.
He's a magical man. He's a mystical being.
It's a mystical elf. All right, jolly old elf.
Depending on the perspective. So, there are people who every year say they've seen Santa. As a matter of fact, I think if you go to YouTube, there's some video that I posted that Dean Worsing shot that says, like, Santa and his sleigh, because he shot it around Christmas or something. You know, you can look for yourself and make up your own mind. But we all know about Santa Claus. But in this country, it seems like people are just now starting to really learn about the dark side of Santa. The Krampus! And basically, if Santa Claus is the guy who comes to reward you when things go well, Krampus is the guy who comes to punish you when you don't behave. And we don't have that, or we haven't had that in the U.S. It exists in certain parts of, like, Germanic traditions and all that, Alpine countries. So, you know, Krampus, he is this furry, tall, horned, demonic, beast-like creature with black eyes. And he comes into your house at night, and he drags the kids off and abuses them and often eats them. And in some cases, he even seduces the women in the house. So he's just a real SOB, okay? He comes and he seduces your women, and he takes your kids off and eats them and beats them. Beats them and eats them in that order, I think.
And derises them.
And when you look at, you know, portrayals of Krampus, you just go to, like, you know, again, go to the internet, go to Google, type in Krampus, K-R-A-M-P-U-S. Oh, this is some of the scariest stuff that you'll see. I mean, this makes Halloween look docile, this Krampus stuff. I mean, it's freaky looking stuff. I'm looking at it right now. I mean, there are dudes who take this very seriously in Germany. And we all know how those Germans take things very seriously. And, I mean, I'm talking like, yeah, they put on sometimes stilts. So they're like 9 feet tall. And, yeah, big, just muscular, furry things. And the hordes of these Krampus guys will just go running through villages, just terrorizing everybody. They start, you know, they grab women and treat them inappropriately. They're getting drunk the whole time. They're just drunk, stinky, demonic beasts that are just taking this advantage to rush through villages in Bavaria and do bad things to people. And yet there's a celebration called Krampusnacht. And you know what? Tomorrow night, there's going to be one, to my knowledge, the first one in Asheville. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I will tell you a little bit more about this weird concept. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Tonight, speaking of strange, I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news. Not for the kiddies. Not for the easily offended. It's kind of like Krampusnacht, actually. So, if you're the type of person who wants to hear that kind of material, well, you know, stay tuned in next hour. There's nothing on radio quite like it. But yeah, you know, before the break, we were talking about the Krampus and the Krampusnacht. They say the history of the Krampus figure stretches back to pre-Christian Germanic traditions. He is sometimes said to be the son of Hel, H-E-L, not Hel. Hell, from Norse mythology. He also shares characteristics, including goat-like ears, legs, and feet with the satyrs and fauns of Greek mythology. The early Catholic Church discouraged celebrations based around the wild goat-like creatures, and during the Inquisition, efforts were made to stamp them out. But Krampus figures persisted, and by the 17th century, Krampus had been incorporated into Christian winter celebrations by pairing them with St. Nicholas. Countries of the former Habsburg Empire have largely borrowed the tradition of Krampus accompanying St. Nicholas on the 5th of December from Austria. However, in the Czech Republic and Slovakia, the mythological figure evolved from the Slavic demon Chort And although nearly the same in appearance, it comes from a tradition distinct from that of Alpine nations. So, you know, nowadays people are just getting together and having, it's kind of like an anti, I don't want to, maybe I shouldn't say anti, but I almost said an anti-holiday party, but it's more like the inverse, like the dark vision of naughty or nice, right? Because getting a lump of coal is one thing. Having a demon come into your bedroom at night and drag you off and kill you and eat you, that's a different, more extreme version of getting a lump of coal. And tomorrow night, December 8th, at the Auditorium, that's ODD, the Auditorium on Haywood Road in Asheville, North Carolina, there is going to be a Krampusnacht. It's partially sponsored by some friends of mine. And since I don't have, like, the official paperwork in front of me, I don't want to spell it out. But, you know, it's... I don't know what it's going to be like. I've never been to a Krampusnacht before. I've heard there are some people who are going to show up really decked out in some crazy-looking, you know, monstrous costumes. I know there are some ladies who are going to be there dressed as if they're victims with, you know, rips and shreds and whatnot in their outfits. So I'm planning to be there, depending on how my cold works out. Is this something you'd be interested in attending, Forrest Connor?
Possibly.
Possibly. You'd make a good Krampus. I've seen you decked out in some scary costumes before.
Yeah, I'd be interested in attending.
And I understand that admission is just like a donation, and all the donations go to Elida Home for Kids, which is a great nonprofit. Shelley Wright, what are you thinking about being there at Krampusnacht?
Thinking it sounds fun. I think I may show up.
Shelly's looking at me like, I don't know if I want to tell people I might be there. Actually, you know, if you consider this whole part about women being kind of harassed, yeah, you'd probably be quite a target. All of our listeners would come out and say, oh, it's Shelly's free game tonight. So that's what you're thinking, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if you're a guy, you know, you have a costume, you know what you're going to wear. But basically, when you go back and you look at the pictures of the women, you know, women basically dress very slutty and have
fun. And that is so not you. No. You never do that.
No, I don't.
You're always very tasteful at Halloween. But this is not Halloween.
No, it's not.
This is Krampusnacht.
True.
So
they're bad boys and girls.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been there, so I don't know, but
I fit in.
You know. Auditorium tomorrow night. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dig into the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.